I will work day in and day out. Wake up and smell the coffee.
We want to return to the European Union.
Another future is possible, but we've got to fight for it.
Order!
Hello and welcome to the Debated podcast. As always, I'm your host, Will. In this episode, I'm delighted to be joined by an incredibly talented comedian who, during the brief premiership of Liz Truss, was everywhere. You certainly can't have failed to miss her content. Noreen Skinner, welcome to the podcast.
Hello, thank you so much for having me.
Well, it's a delight to have you on. And before we get into the amazing stuff that you did during Liz Truss's premiership and subsequently with her as a character, I'd like to ask, how did you first get involved in comedy? What was your route into producing comedic material? How did you first get involved in it?
Well, I always really enjoyed comedy from an early age, and I just really loved watching any programs that involved anything comical. I grew up on Alan Partridge and Train and sketch shows, Smack the Pony, and then American Things. I love Will Ferrell, and I always sort of really aspired to be like them. And I don't know if that was my brother's influence. I spent a lot of time with him, like if my mum was at work or whatever, and that was what was he was watching. So maybe I was just trying to be cool like him. And then as I got older, I actually trained in musical theatre, and I loved it, but I didn't feel like it was fulfilling something else that I wanted to do. And I just happened to do a stand-up set at the end of my 3 years of training, and it went really well. And it was kind of from that moment I thought, oh, okay, this is actually what maybe I need to focus on. But it was quite a long journey with it, because I ended up sort of stopping in my tracks and then kind of trying to pursue musical theatre, because that's what I had trained in. And it was only probably, I don't know, maybe 5 or 6 years ago that I really started to hone in again, and kind of I kept gravitating back towards it, you know, within my work. So started a comedy duo and then a comedy trio. And interestingly, the trio was a comedy cabaret trio. So it was kind of intertwining all of those elements. But I just, whatever I do, whether I try to go away from it, I always get pulled back. I just love the creativity and the process of it all, really.
Mm. And did you like ever set out to see a distinction between, you mentioned that you started doing stand-up, you did a stand-up set. Do you see any distinction between, say, doing stand-up and the cabaret stuff that you were doing, or did it all kind of like intertwine and evolve naturally? Did you start performing comedy in one format and then naturally evolve into another, or did you sort of like just try whatever you could?
Yeah, it's a good question, that. I think I used to think it was all very separate. I definitely felt like you do stand-up, or you do sketch comedy, or you do cabaret. Like, obviously they intertwined, but I didn't feel like I knew how to do that, or even know at the time that that's what I wanted to do. So I think stand-up was like, I felt like it's the starting block for everything, and sort of then other things come. But I think that's completely changed now. Like, I feel like anything's possible. And it was interesting. It's only, I suppose, as your confidence grows and you start creating things and forming the duo and started doing sketches and went to Edinburgh, that then you meet people along the way. Like, I met my comedy partner on a pantomime, playing Beauty and the Beast, and we were playing those famous roles, baguette and croissant. Literal rolls, bread rolls, that nobody'd ever heard of before. And we just were finishing off each other's sentences. Not that sounds like that's what we just did in life. That was the parts we had to finish. And then we just got on really well. And so that was a natural, organic experience to kind of jump from. But that actually, weirdly, because we kept getting employed together, we ended up being like doing clown work and things. And we were Russian frog tamers, dancing frog tamers at one job. So I think by that point, it felt like all cards were off the table, like anything, we could just do whatever we wanted. And that's when dance started coming into it. And then a couple of years later, then met the other members of the comedy trio, the Dots, and that's when it was like, well, actually, every comedy is always based on truth. Like, the if we put truth into this, then you can mix whatever medium you want within it. And the next thing was on Britain's Got Talent. So it just it's definitely been an evolving thing, I think.
So when did you first start filming sketches and filming content that way? Was it post Britain's Got Talent or before?
It was before. Basically, the pandemic, everything stopped, and I didn't know, you know, as we all didn't really know what to do with ourselves, and work had stopped, and I just wanted to be productive. And I'd been putting that on the shelf for years and years. I'd always wanted to do sketches, and with the dream being that I could be on a sketch TV show or have my own one at some point. And I just was too scared to put anything out there. And I thought, with the pandemic and putting things into perspective, I was like, well, I'll just keep throwing stuff at the wall and see what sticks. So basically just started a bunch of characters and started doing it from there. You know, nobody was viewing them or watching them. So the worry that I had that they were rough didn't really matter, because, I mean, the hours that I spent thinking, oh God, better not put that out. And then nobody saw it anyway. It didn't really matter, I suppose, in the grand scheme of things. And it felt good to do something I'd always wanted to do.
And how did that transition from doing original comic characters to doing impersonations, to doing impressions, to doing political stuff? I mean, had you experimented with doing impressions beforehand, or was it something that just kind of naturally evolved as you were doing the videos and you thought, oh, well, this would be something interesting to do?
Yeah, the truth be told, I'd never even thought about doing impressions, because I never thought I'd be any good at them. So I just basically, I also, in terms of political stuff, interestingly, I'd never been, I say interested, there's a wrong word. I never felt like it was something that we wanted to do within our comedy with my comedy duo. And it felt like we wanted to just stay away from politics and be an escape from everything. Just we were more comedy as well. Yeah. And, so I didn't really feel, again, maybe a bit of an imposter. I didn't really feel like I maybe knew enough. So I'd always shied away from that, and therefore impressions of politicians, but also just impressions generally. So it was only happened to be that, this is a true story, someone said to me, oh, you need to do Liz Truss. And I was like, I don't know who she is. And then I was on TikTok and I saw this woman talking about cheese. I thought she was a comedian. Genuinely, I thought, like, this person who looked maybe like she had similar casting to me, similar, that she was doing a better job than me at comedy, and maybe I shouldn't do it anymore. And then it was only when I put two and two together and a friend said, you need to do something on her, and you need to do it now. It was her parody campaign, her video. And I thought, oh my gosh, like, this is real. I have to do something. And that, so it actually became, again, an organic thing that started doing that. And then afterwards, the pressure to sort of keep putting out content to do with her. And obviously after she left, I then felt that I'd got this following of people that would follow me for that reason. So I felt like it was good to try and branch out and do more, you know, I say impressions loosely, because they are not impressions. I mean, I wouldn't say I'm an impressionist. They are definitely parodies of little things that I think, or nuances about them that I've picked up. But that's where it's come from. So it's a strange journey I've been on.
In terms of the, like, the voice and the physicality of playing a Liz Truss parody, I mean, was it something that you felt that you were instantly able to replicate, or how much work did it take to get the voice and the like, the head tilt and the hands?
Yeah, it's a great question. Again, I don't actually know. The very first one I did, the campaign video, I don't actually think I paid too much attention to it, because I was just sort of trying to parody it. And I kind of got a few of the, I tried to really focus on her smile and that sort of silly smile that she does. That was the main one. And then I was listening to her voice and I was like, it does sound like she's got a cold all the time. So I tried to maybe put that in and a few little hand mannerisms. So that's kind of where it started, those three things really. And it was only then, again, I think by that time, with all of the other non-political content and other sketches I've been doing and then not getting any views, I'd got to the point by then that I was like, well, nobody's really watching these anyway, so I'll just do it for my own fun and enjoyment. And then put it up on, I think it was a Friday night, and overnight it just went wild. And I was like, okay, if I'm going to have to do more of these, I should probably hone in a little bit more. So that's when I started doing loads of research on her and like watching loads of her stuff to try and get a little bit clearer with, you know, what she sounds like, phrases that I could then use to get into character. I mean, pork markets in Beijing as a beginning of me starting to film was like, I did my own head in because I just kept saying it over and over again. So yeah, I suppose it happened over time that then I just kept adding more little details in and sayings that would help me keep in her character.
Yeah. I mean, obviously the first one that you did was during the campaign. When she won, how did you feel? Did you feel that, oh, this is a great opportunity for me because I've cornered this market and I can really, you know, now that this person is prime minister, I can really create some great content from it?
Yeah, I mean, I think I probably was the only one, and obviously other people who were parodying her or doing impressions as well, that was kind of benefiting from her time. that's for sure. But I think it was like on two levels. I was like, yes, this would be good because I can kind of really get out there and make a name for myself doing this thing and can use it as a jumping board. But also I was like, oh gosh, this is going to be a lot of work because I was already exhausted by that point because I kind of was trying to churn out as many videos as I could according to what she was doing. But she was doing stuff like every couple of days and it was a new story. And by the time I'd actually written one and I was about to film it, something else would have happened. So it was just, I knew what was coming for me. So I think it were, you know, for all I knew, that could have been much longer than the very short space of time she was in.
In terms of the name Liv Strauss, and obviously the other characters that you do have punning names as well, what made you want to create a pun on their name just as opposed to saying, you know, this is my impersonation of Liz Strauss?
I think that came from probably, like I was mentioning earlier about this, the imposter syndrome. Comes to, well, both politics, but also doing an impression of someone mainly. Like, because it was something I'd never done before, I wanted to stay one step removed from it, that it was kind of a parody of this person. So, a way of doing that. So, it wasn't, maybe the attention didn't have to be so much on my impression, but just the nuances. But also because, you know, but having never done that stuff before, and I do everything I do, I try to do with, you know, good intentions, and like, I don't, you know, wouldn't want to bully anyone or attack anyone in a certain way. So it was also another way of sort of removing myself from that a little bit. So it's, I was a bit separated from the actual person in some way.
And when obviously her premiership came to a fairly dramatic end, I mean, how did you feel about that? Because it's something that you had obviously been able to, you know, make a great deal of content out, and suddenly in such a relatively short period, she was no longer prime minister.
Yeah, I'm not gonna lie. I actually, like, I was really upset. but not being on two levels, because one, I was upset that obviously this thing that was going so well, and I was getting interviews and TV interest and lots of things that were felt like doors were opening that maybe wouldn't have done, you know, that exposure. So and also I was thinking I could maybe make it be like the number one Liz Truss impersonator or something, you know, or at least be in the mix, because I know there are others who are doing brilliant jobs as well. But I was sad because obviously that had finished, but also I think I was sad because in a relief sense of the word that I could just go, I don't have to keep churning. I couldn't have maintained or sustained what I was doing like that. That was the most crazy couple of months ever. So actually it was probably a good thing. So it was probably a relief at the end of it as well.
And I mean, you mentioned earlier that, you know, you felt you've had to keep producing similar content, similar like political sketches, because you've built up a following through the Liv Strauss videos. When she left office and you know, thought that you had to make similar kind of content, but not necessarily just with her, what was your immediate thoughts as to who you could make content out of, who you could make videos about, who you could impersonate or create parodies of?
Yeah, to be honest, I didn't really know. I felt like a rabbit in headlights, really, because I just kept getting comments from people just being like, oh no, are your career's over? What are you gonna do now? And I thought that overnight I would just lose everyone, all of my subscribers or whatever. And I thought, oh gosh, what am I going to do? I need to do something. So I think I was in panic mode. I felt like I needed to do something and quickly. So that's when I sort of just started playing around. And I was looking at Rishi. I was looking at Angela Rayner. I was looking at Nadine. I just decided that I think that that's what I'll do now, is just play. I'll use it as a playground, kind of add a few more people and characters into the mix and see whether any of those are any good. But I've kind of like got a joke going now that I'm like a political hitman, because when I did, obviously Liz, she disappeared. And then when I did Nadine, my first one of those, I think it was a talk TV parody. And then she resigned like a week late. So I'm like, oh no, I've got some strange powers. But yeah, I kind of, my idea being that no one's safe, you know, it doesn't matter which party or, you know, yeah, and also celebrities, I suppose. But I suppose at the time, and even now, there's so much attention around, you know, certain areas or certain people. That's where my attention has kind of ended up going.
Yeah. What's the process between having an idea and producing a video? Is it a case of that you see something in the news that catches people's attention or catches your imagination, and then you maybe storyboard around it, or do you just go straight into writing a sketch? How does it work?
So it's different for different situations. So for example, like if Liz was to do, if we know that she's doing a speech, like, you know, I know she's got one coming up next week. If she was to do a speech, I would probably then just tune in, watch it, and then pick out the finer bits that I think are really funny or really silly, and then create a new script around that using key phrases and things that she's done, and also try and condense. Often, you know, she'd do a speech that was like 45 minutes long, condense it down to 2 minutes or 2 minutes 20 for Twitter, which is a nightmare. So much content. So that's sometimes easier because you have a constraint, you have a thing to work with. Whereas, say, for instance, if there's nothing going on in the news, and I used to panic that I needed to do something like once a week, then I'd be trying to find something. And I think that almost makes it worse. I've kind of relaxed a little bit now with that. And I kind of, if something pops up that inspires me and it's not a speech, then I'll kind of go, okay, like you mentioned earlier, I'd storyboard that and say, okay, what could I do? How could I make that work? What setting could I put that character in? And what might they say, using things that I know about them from before? So like, for instance, around the coronation, I just did one for Liz about the coronation pie, and about her baking a pie. And obviously she hasn't done that, but it just seemed perfect for her. So yeah, that's it. The process, I suppose, varies, but it can be very pressured, especially if you know that there's a time constraint on it, because, you know, the news moves so fast.
Yeah. And in terms of political comedy, in terms of sketches, how much do you think now that this kind of content is decentralized? It's something that, you know, you'll see different creators pop up on YouTube, TikTok, Instagram, Twitter, wherever. And it's not similar to how it might have been in the past, where you might have had, like, not the 9 o'clock news, where you mentioned Smack the Pony as an example of comedy writers and people writing about politics and newspapers and things like that, having a platform on television, that being the sole way that their comedy would be dispensed. Do you think that it's a bit more spread out now?
I think, do you mean as in terms of, like, people being able to, it's not necessarily having to be on TV?
I
think, I mean, it's brilliant what social media, it has its pros and its cons, but it is brilliant in that you can reach such, so many more people than you think, or if you get a video that really just ticks a box or at the perfect time, you can go viral, or, you know, suddenly you'll get the exposure that then might mean that you can make that leap over into TV. So it does feel, it definitely feels different. But then I suppose it's difficult for me because I haven't been doing it online for as long. Mm. And actually thinking about it, when I did my just silly sketches and things, which I really enjoy and would like to do more of, they rarely do kind of have that attraction because they're not about something particular. They're not current. So it's almost like if you're jumping on the thing that is happening at the time, then that's brilliant. But then the pressure that also comes with that, that's the one thing I would say, is that, you know, you're trying to do it because everyone else is doing it and you're trying to make it as good, you know, great quality as you can. So I've got my boyfriend, like, does all the editing, so it's just us, it's just a two-man thing, so I'll write it as quickly as I can and then we'll film it and then he'll try and edit it as quickly as he can, and it's just like this strange crazy factory for like 24 hours. But I do think ultimately it's brilliant to have this opportunity to reach people in a way that, you know, you wouldn't have been able to, you know, back in the day. I kind of think, how did people do that? but then I suppose that also comes with a new thing of it being quite oversaturated with lots of people. So sometimes that then can make it difficult. So it does have its pros and cons for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. In terms of what you've got planned for the future, are you just, the immediate future, are you just thinking of continuing making the same kind of content that you are at the moment? Are you thinking of creating something a bit different, going in a different direction? What are you kind of like focused on for the future?
I think I would like to keep doing what I'm doing in terms of whatever is current and inspiring. I think I will follow that. And if that's political, great. And if it's not, that's great too. I would like to do some more of my sketches and my older characters, or make some new ones as well, and just keep building my following, really. But I'm also working on, I've never done a solo show before, and I've done, you know, shows with other people, or, you know, a trio, like I was mentioning earlier, but I'm going to go to Camden Fringe this August and do a show, because I just think the whole thing is ridiculous. Like, my career started and ended in all the place. So it's called The Rise and Fall of Noreen Skinner, a Liz Truss parody. So the idea being that I'm going to fuse stand-up with characters, both political and non-political, and sort of tell my story, I suppose, of what's happened and is happening. So that's a new a project which I'm really excited about.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for taking the time to speak to me for the podcast, Noreen. I do have one final question for you, however. If you could choose any comedian, any comic actor, living or dead, throughout the great history of comedy to perform material with, who would you most like to perform a sketch or to do something with?
That is such a hard question. You're throwing me there. Victoria Wood, I think.
Yeah.
I just think, you know, she was fantastic, and especially with the musical kind of like element as well. I'd love to do a sketch with her and then sing a ridiculous song at a piano. Like, I just think that would be amazing.
Yeah, I think that's a fantastic choice. I mean, truly one of the greatest comic performers of the 20th century. So I think you've made an excellent choice there. Thank you once again for taking the time to speak to me. If people want to find out more about you, follow you, you know, see what you're up to, where should they go to find out more about you?
Come to my house. No, I'm joking. It's my website is noreenskinner.co.uk, and I'm Noreen Skinner, which is N-E-R-I-N-E Skinner, on all of my socials as well.
Fantastic. Thank you once again for coming on the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the podcast. If you've enjoyed it, you can subscribe to us on iTunes, Spotify, Podbeam, and Amazon Music. You can also follow us on Twitter, @DebatedPodcast, like us on Facebook, Debated Podcast, and if you'd like to get in touch with us, whether about appearing on an episode of the podcast or commenting on an episode that you've listened to, you can do so at thedebatedpodcast@gmail.com. Thank you for listening. I hope you listen to the next one.